This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi, and welcome to what might be the final episode of... Actually, you know what? I don't want to say that. So, all right, let's try that again in 3, 2... Hi, and welcome to a special post-verdict edition of Nexium on Trial. I'm Casey Seiler, the managing editor of the Albany Times-Union. I am on the phone once again, still in the wilds of Brooklyn, with Rob Gavin, our justice reporter, who has had a wild couple of days, probably nothing more wild than Wednesday, when the verdict against Keith Raniere, the leader of the shadowy organization known as Nexium, was handed down, announced by Judge Nicholas Garufas at 2:30 in the afternoon. And that verdict was, Rob, you want to take it away?
Guilty on all counts.
Which is remarkable when you consider not only the fact that we're talking about a racketeering prosecution, but the remarkable thing is that the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York proved not some, but all of a dazzling and disturbing series of underlying acts, and all they had to prove to get a racketeering conviction was any two of those acts, right?
Correct. What it is a really a resounding and complete repudiation of all things Keith Raniere in this case, and it's something that happened in a little over 4 hours. It was sort of amazing. You know, I don't know that anybody is shocked that he was convicted. I don't know that people are entirely shocked he was convicted, even of all counts. But to have it happen in a little over 4 hours is really kind of amazing. I mean, this is a 7-count case. As you mentioned, the racketeering charge includes 11 elements. They, like you said, they found guilty of every single count. And within that racketeering count, that's 11 underlying acts, which include sexual exploitation of a child, that includes extortion, that includes identity theft, that includes wire fraud conspiracy, that includes forced labor. This was an overwhelming defeat for Keith Raniere. I don't think there's any way to overstate that. I think it's something that his lawyer apparently saw coming. If you listen to Mark Agnifilo's comments, he said that Keith asked him, "Do you think I'm going to be convicted of all counts?" He told him, "Yeah, I think you are." And Keith Raniere said, "Well, that's not justice." I guess, you know, apparently that's how the conversation went.
Just to back up, the week began with closing arguments. Not unexpectedly, you had the prosecution calling Raniere a con man, a bully, a sexual predator.
Crime boss. That crime was the boss. Big one. Much like Tanya Hajar said in her opening statement, we once again heard the term in Moira Penza's closing statement that Keith Raniere was a con man, a crime boss, and what that does in and of itself is when you say crime boss, well, this is a racketeering case, right? You know, he's not a mob boss, but what that does is it puts it right to the charge. When you call him a con man, that's saying that he's a liar. And then on top of all that, the fact he was someone who was a sexual predator. This is someone who, according to witness after witness and prosecution's case, was someone whose entire platform was based on nefarious intentions, and you know, this is a alleged self-help guru, and really, you know, if you listen to the comments of U.S. Attorney Donahue at the end of the day, was saying how, you know, this guy was really just after targeting women and you know, using them for his own reasons. It was a very, very multifaceted case and involved a lot of different aspects you don't usually see in the same case, you know, forced labor, being the same case, for instance, as sex trafficking, being in the same case as extortion. So, I mean, there's
wire fraud, identity theft, immigration fraud, you know, you name it.
You name it, correct.
Yep. U.S. Attorney Donahue said that Ranieri was a modern-day Svengali, which, first of all, is a reference that I don't know if a lot of people are going to get. But but then the defense cast him in a very different light and said, oh, what you're dealing with here is a guy who really wasn't that interested in sex. What he was really interested in was human connection. And Mark Agnifilo went on at length kind of suggesting that Ranieri was just somebody who was interested in, as he put it, the word he used was the kind of gravity of powerful attraction, emotional attraction. How did that seem to play in the courtroom?
I think many of us, when we heard that, had this reaction of what? Because we all heard testimony, repeated testimony, which Mark Agnifilo did not dispute, that Keith was sleeping with more than 20 women in NXIVM. We heard testimony that he had asked women to send them pictures of their private parts. There was really graphic testimony I can't really say on a podcast. So, you know, we absolutely heard testimony about things right out of Pulp Fiction and, you know, 50 Shades of Grey or more. So to go from that and then to say, oh, well, he wasn't really after sex, I mean, it's laughable. It's ridiculous. And I think the jury quickly saw through that. And I know, in addition to that, there was this claim that Keith was not a misogynist. Anybody who heard the conversations about the women's group Jeunesse and the men's group SOP, which stood for Society of Protectors, this was about as close to a textbook definition of misogyny as you could possibly see. And, you know, let's not be lost that this is someone whose lawyer is acknowledging he was the leader of a secret group known as DOS, which stands for Dominus Obsequious Sororium, which, if you translate it into Latin, stands for Lord Master of the Obedient Female Companion.
Right.
And they're branded physically with a cauterizing pen with his initials. So to say that guy is not a misogynist, I mean, that's a really tough sell. I think he's tried to maybe counterbalance it by telling the jury, very unusual to hear this, by the way, that his own client they may find to be repulsive, disgusting, and offensive. I mean, he used those words. And, you know, many times we will hear lawyers say something to the effect of, hey, you may not like my client.
My guy's not perfect. Yeah.
Correct. But this was beyond that. And then when we heard Paul Taranassian speak alongside Mark after the verdict, it seemed like they weren't on the same page. Mark is basically acknowledged at one point, either at the press conference or when we were talking to him outside the courtroom, that Keith Ranieri had caused, he feels bad about the quote-unquote damage he caused, which is a very different statement you usually hear at the end of a trial where someone's convicted.
Agnifilo said, I hope the verdict brings closure to many of the women who were involved in this case. That's the type of thing that the U.S. Attorney's Office,
correct,
or that a district attorney will say at the end of, you know, talking about the, you know, a murder victim's family or something like that. It was quite remarkable to hear it coming out of the mouth of a defense attorney.
And I know Mark Agnifilo does have a history as a prosecutor in New Jersey. You know, you start to wonder, did he at some point during this trial say, man, what did I sign up for? I would assume not. I think he tried his best to try in fairness to Mark Agnifilo, this was not the greatest hand he was given. He wasn't, you know, he didn't get four aces in this case. But that being said, people were very nervous about this verdict. I know there were two women near me in the courtroom who were former NXIVM members who were extremely nervous. Even someone who was as well educated in the, you know, the process of NXIVM as Mark Vicente, who testified, told me that he thought he just hoped for at least a 50% conviction rate, you know, and on the charges. So there was a lot of people really nervous. We saw Catherine Oxenberg in there. She didn't get in there till about two. I mean, the verdict actually came down. It was announced it would be at 2:30. Came down about 2:45. I think Catherine Oxenberg probably got in there about 2:43 or so.
And now Catherine Oxenberg, her daughter India, was in Nexium. She was a member of DOS, the Master Slave Organization. Since this all came to light and in the wake of the arrest of Keith Raniere, India Oxenberg separated herself from Nexium, and her mother now, who has written a book about this ordeal, now says that she is doing fine. She is healing.
Correct. And India Oxenberg and, one of the DOS slaves who was, who had testified in the case, a very powerful witness, I thought, they were sitting, she was the woman, the next to last DOS slave, but not Jay. We haven't identified her, so I won't identify her here. But, she's a woman who had been an actress. She was in her early 30s, and she's the woman who was basically duped into joining it. And Catherine Oxenberg later told me, she said, hey, these girls did not know the depths of all of this until they sat in that courtroom. Some of this stuff they had never heard before. Mm-hmm. We heard Keith Raniere's voice. Did they know that Keith had been on tape talking about the age of consent, being 12 and then being evidently okay with that? Did they know Keith Raniere had been on tape saying how young children – in his view, could be perfectly happy having sex with adults, and they're somewhere quote unquote adult-like. I mean, those are jarring statements to anybody, let alone someone who they had both been sexually involved with. Of course, not at their own choice. They had both been coerced into the group based on the testimony of them and other people, which made this.
So Keith Raniere faces sentencing on September 25th. After this conviction, just on the top count, he faces a minimum of 16 years in prison?
15 to life is on the sex trafficking charges.
Right.
But that could also run consecutive to the racketeering charges, which the max is 20 on. So right then and there, you're looking at 35 to life. He's 58 years old. We all know when his birthday is because we know D-Week's is August. August 26th is his birthday. So, Keith is looking at life in prison, and it's something that his lawyers made very clear they knew going in that was going to be what he faced if he was convicted on everything. And even if he was not convicted of anything, he still faced the prospect of facing criminal charges in the Northern District in connection with the possession of child pornography and sexual exploitation of a child.
Now, we should say those charges were dropped from the case in the Eastern District, which is basically Brooklyn and points east out to Long Island.
Correct.
Because it was determined that the venue for those charges properly is here in the Capital Region, which is the Northern District of the state of New York.
Correct. If anybody was unsure why this case was in Brooklyn, there was a number of people involved in the case were in Brooklyn, including the woman I just mentioned who was the actress. She lived in Brooklyn. She communicated with Raniere and other Nexium members coming up from Brooklyn. People flew into JFK Airport on their way to go into Nexium and whatnot. And, JFK Airport's in Queens, that's in the Eastern District. And there was other things. I mean, it wasn't disputed. So there was no question of why it was in Brooklyn then. But those charges really didn't have any place in Brooklyn as far as being a charge in themselves, but as an act of racketeering, they did. And like you said, it could have been any two of them. And just two of those sexual exploitation charges alone. One was on November 2nd, 2015, and one was on, 2005. And another was on, I think, November 24th, 2005. And if the jury just found that alone, that he was guilty, they could have convicted him of racketeering, and that's 20 years right there. So it's kind of amazing, to think about that. I mean, he's looking at life in prison in any way you slice it.
I would just say to back up what we were saying about the Northern District, while there was no question of that the case had venue in Brooklyn in the Eastern District, it's very different from the kind of larger question as to why – the Northern District, where all of these acts were occurring, was not the U.S. Attorney's Office that ever brought any of these charges. That's something that we've written about at great length. It's something that that might bear looking into again. U.S. Attorney Donahue of the Eastern District, who we were referring to earlier, thanked the lawyers and the investigators in the Northern District. But the question, I think, still obtains. Everything that was known about NXIVM, a case, as far as we know, was never brought against the organization or any of these individuals by the Northern District.
Not by the Northern District, not by the Albany County District Attorney's Office, not by the Saratoga County District Attorney's Office.
Not by the state police.
And let it not be lost on people that when Moira Penza, the federal prosecutor, and Tanya Hajar, along with Mark Lesko, did a really incredible job, if you look at it, in putting this case together. When Moira Penza begins her closing statement, what does she begin with? It's No Place in Brooklyn. She begins with setting the stage of Knox Woods and talks about how Knox Woods, it looks like the typical American suburb. It looks like, the typical American dream. But as we know, things are not what they seem. I mean, Knox Woods is the center of this case. If there's a setting for the trial of NXIVM outside of the courthouse in Brooklyn, it's Knox Woods. It's this development in Half Moon. It's very, to someone driving by, you may not give it a second look.
It's as vanilla as can be.
Yeah. It's just kind of amazing that all this activity was happening in this little, village, so to speak, within a town, right off Route 9 in cookie cutter suburbia in the capital region. It's kind of amazing.
So Rob, we're talking Thursday afternoon. You're coming back hopefully tomorrow morning. You're working on a story for Sunday's paper about kind of what's next, a couple of the things that we've discussed. But the big question, and you can kind of just say it in capsule form because we're running out of time, is, what's going to happen to NXIVM as opposed to – NXIVM was never charged as a corporate entity in this case, but its leadership has been essentially decapitated, not just Ranieri,
correct,
but also Nancy Salzman, Lauren Salzman, Claire Bronfman. So these senior leaders of NXIVM are no more. What's going to happen to, the self-help organization?
Great question. I mean, and just to be clear, the racketeering enterprise was Keith Raniere's inner circle. They never said it was DOS. They never said it was NXIVM itself. It was the inner circle of Keith Raniere. As for NXIVM, we know NXIVM is no longer going to be operating out of, the 400 block of New Connor Road. Those properties on the 14th of June were part of a foreclosure agreement between Nancy Salzman and the government. So that's gone. There will not be very soon the sign that says, parking reserved for Nancy Salzman will no longer be there. We do know that NXIVM is still operating in Mexico. We know that there are people who are very supportive of NXIVM. We saw them at the trial. We saw seven or eight supporters of NXIVM at the courthouse Monday and Tuesday. And we saw there's an upcoming there's a guy by the name of Mark Elliott, and he's says he's been helped by he's a motivational speaker, and he calls this whole case character assassination. But as far as the entity of NXIVM, there's still a structure of NXIVM in place, certainly in Mexico, and there's no longer a Vancouver office that went away a few years ago. We're not going to have one in Albany, but we know there's still a structure in Mexico, and we know from talking to people that there are still people in the capital region who are very loyal to Keith Raniere, and we saw some of those people at the trial supporting him to the very end.
An amazing story. Rob, I really appreciate it. All your good work. Your watch has ended. Come on home.
Nothing like a Game of Thrones reference.
That's right, to wrap everything up. A show that's all about power and cruelty. You've been listening to the post-verdict episode of NXIVM on Trial. I'm Casey Seiler, managing editor of the Times Union. This has been a Times Union production. I'd like to thank Rob Gavin, our outstanding reporter, as well as Jeff Anderson and Associates, which has been supporting the Times Union's coverage of the NXIVM trial. Thanks very much for listening. There will be more.
done.